Dr. C here. Before we begin, I'd like to make sure that you're aware that this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. BetterHelp is a leading provider of online therapy, and then they provide video, phone, or live chat sessions with a licensed professional therapist. It's affordable, and you can connect with your therapist within 48 hours. Now, as a special offer to our Surviving Narcissism listeners, they'll offer a 10% discount for your first month of professional therapy. All you have to do is go to BetterHelp.com, that's BetterHelp.com/Surviving Narcissism Podcast. Now, I know that many of you would find online therapy to be quite life-changing, and so go to BetterHelp.com/Surviving Narcissism Podcast, and many thanks to the people at BetterHelp for sponsoring our podcast.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Surviving Narcissism Podcast with your host, Dr. Les Carter. I'm Michaela, the program director, and in today's episode, Dr. Carter welcomes Dr. Dan Newharth to discuss the fallout from controlling parents.
Hi, Team Healthy. I'm so pleased to be with you here one more time for another of our podcasts. And you know that I like to find people that I consider to be of great interest that can speak into some of the topics that we cover here on our channel. And boy, do we have a good one here today. With me is Dr. Dan Newharth, all the way from the San Francisco area. So Dan, welcome to our Surviving Narcissist podcast.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Now, you've been in practice for quite some time, right? There in the Bay Area?
About 27 years.
Okay. And tell us what kind of things that you tend to specialize in, what kind of clientele walks through your doors?
I have two specialties. One is couples counseling. I love doing couples counseling, and you know, people bring their relationship right in the room, and I think you can make a lot of headway with people who want their relationships to be better. But the other specialty I have is working with people who grew up in families with unhealthy control, or people who are affected by, which is obviously one of your key specialties, affected by narcissism, by unhealthy narcissism.
Well, and of course, when you talk about control, that's kind of at the heart and center of what we're talking about with narcissism anyway. Tell us about some of the things that you hear in your therapy office from people who will look backwards and say, man, there were so many control dimensions there, and I didn't know what was going on at the time, but here's what I recall. And what kind of stories do you hear that would be pretty common that most of our audience would probably be able to relate to?
You know, Les, the stories are sometimes they're heartbreaking. I remember this one woman who was in her 30s, and she talked about how she would write, and I think about this with Valentine's coming up, she would write love notes to her dad, and she'd get the love notes back with the spelling and grammar corrected. And you know, I mean, the message there is, it's not what you say, but you have to say it the right way. I remember this talking to this guy who was, I think he was in junior high, middle school, and he was a swimmer, competitive swimmer, but he swam second in a race. And when he came home, his dad said, "You take that bathing suit and you throw it in the trash because you failed."
Wow.
And, you know, example after example of people who are just, they're, you know, kids want love from their parents. They want approval. They want affection. But with unhealthy control, or with narcissistic parents, that comes at a price. It's conditional so often. You know, you have to be a certain way. You have to be the best. You have to give the parent what they want. And so years later, people will come in with this lasting legacy of growing up that way, which I know you have experienced in your many, many years. And it affects their relationships. I don't know that I should say they, I should say are, because I count myself as, you know, I had a very, very successful but controlling narcissistic dad. That's one of the reasons I got into this. The other is because I saw so many people in my practice with this issue. And I think one grows up with a sense of maybe second guessing oneself, giving other people the benefit of the doubt, but you don't give it to yourself because you were second guessed. And there's a whole litany of things that can come from that legacy.
In one of your articles, and by the way, you write quite a bit in Psychology Today Online and Psych Central, and there's a whole bunch of your articles out there, and I've read a lot of them. But in one of them, you have a list of characteristics or traits that are very common for narcissistic parents. For example, bestowing gifts with strings attached, or they insist that you trust them, but then they betray your trust. I mean, what are some of the other themes or common things that we might see?
There are so many double messages, mixed messages, and double binds that kids get put into. And I think the biggest one in dealing with a narcissistic parent, there's a catch-22 that is difficult, which is to give a parent what they want in order to get their approval, you lose yourself. To give yourself what you want and what you need, you lose the parent's affection. It's such a difficult choice.
Yeah, what a double bind that is. In fact, when I would coach up, I actually started out doing work with small children and teenagers, and then it was mixed in with my work with adults. But one of the things I'd tell young parents is part of your job is to work yourself out of a job. You want to make yourself a little bit less and a little bit less necessary as each year goes by. And part of that means it's a process of helping that child discover who they need to be. And just what you're saying right there, it's like, no, you need to discover what I tell you need to be. And one of the ways you can tell real quickly is narcissistic parents do a lot of telling, but they don't really want to know what your opinion or feelings or thoughts are. They're just, like you say, they're wanting to push themselves into you.
It's so damaging. And the good thing is there's so much attention given to it today. There, I noticed an article in the New York Times today about a Pew study about parents' involvement with their adult children of college age. And in a lot of ways, they can, but the trend is they're more and more involved in their kids' lives. That can be good or bad, but there's this. You know, there are these phrases we have like helicopter parents who are always hovering. And the one I like is snowplow parents. And the distinction by whoever coined that phrase was snowplow parents try and pave the road for their kids and make the way easier instead of readying their kid to travel the road. And when you have a narcissistic parent, they're so motivated by their own needs and their own agenda that they just don't think about what's going to help prepare their child to be an effective adult.
A lot of parents don't really slow down and think exactly what is it that this child needs from me. And whether it's conscious or subconscious, they think almost the exact opposite kind of question. What is it that you can give me to make my life a little bit better? And I find that to be very, disconcerting is not even a strong enough word. But it's so much about me, my needs. And of course, when we talk about narcissism, we talk about selfishness and entitlement and having to be on the top end. And so they don't really see fully the humanity of their own kids, do they?
No, they don't. And I think that's one of the hardest things, although one of the most important things in adulthood to move beyond this kind of an upbringing, which is to recognize something very painful, which is that the person who was supposed to protect me, care for me, help me do what's healthy, didn't. They instead did what they wanted and what they needed, and they used me to fulfill their needs. And that's what a narcissistic parent does by and large. And that's a hard thing to come to grips with.
Would you say that all along the way, though, they can actually have this attitude that says, you ought to be grateful for what I'm giving you? And so they almost magnanimous attitude toward themselves. Look at all the nice things I provide, and you're going to complain?
That's exactly right. And in a way, it's a kind of a brainwashing process in a way, because they're justifying what they're doing and making you second guess yourself. And most of us don't know when we grow up what's normal. We just know what we have in our family. It's often not until later that we can look back and say, wait a minute, that wasn't very healthy.
I want to share with you something of a personal nature. I tend not to get too much into this in my videos, but my own father was pretty controlling, like real controlling. And he died a year ago, and before he died, I had multiple conversations with him about our past and asking, when this happened, tell me what was going on or this. And frankly, it was very healing. But I knew the answers to the questions, but it was so good to hear him say it. One of the things he would talk about is how he himself was afraid of his own father, and then if he was afraid of his father, he was petrified of his own grandfather. I mean, to the point he met him twice because he wasn't allowed around the house because he was so mean. And when you're an adult, it can be so. You hate to think on. I was going to use the word healing. You hate to think, well, I'm glad to know that you had all these crummy things in your past, but it can be so healing to hear, oh, in other words, you're carrying some of the pain. And to my own father's credit, he tried to certainly make some improvements in the way that we did things, but you also pushed along some of the pain to the next generation behind you. Would you say that that's a pretty common theme that we see in these parents who can come across in a super controlling, domineering, insensitive kind of way?
I think it is. I think it's an intergenerational cycle. And it may be that they were controlled and so they become controlling. Other times it could be the opposite. I mean, my dad lost his father when my dad was two. So instead of having a controlling dad, he had a void. And I think early on he decided, my dad, that, life was scary and I got to control everything. So there's different paths to get to that same point, but yeah, and I think it's great that you were able to have those healing conversations with your dad. That's ideal. A lot of times that doesn't happen. A lot of times a parent isn't open to that. They won't look at themselves. And you wrote something I think recently in one of your works about questions, that you ask a narcissist, and so much of it was about
Right.
that they can't answer. I think that was
Yeah,
the
exactly. And I think the first one is tell me about your hurts.
right. And I thought the questions were very useful because it just shows that for most narcissistic people, they either don't have awareness to look inside, or the last thing they want to do. And if you have a parent like that and you want to go to them and say, how come this happened in childhood? Often you'll get a look, I did the best I could. You should be thankful for it. And, any problems you have are all yours, and anything good you have, you got from me. There's nowhere to go with that when you have
Okay,
that attitude.
what is it about narcissism in general that causes these individuals to be so afraid of just personal and emotional vulnerability?
It's such a good question. I know you've spoken a lot about that. I mean, I think it's that I think at the base of my view, the base of narcissism is just incredible shame. And there's a terror of actually seeing that shame. And if you can't look at what's deep inside, you can't heal it. And so narcissists are always trying to cover up the shame, the insecurity, by acting larger than life, or whatever it is, being the best, being the smartest, being the richest, being always in control, so that they never have to feel those difficult feelings that are just part of being human that they carry.
Yeah, there's a defense mechanism called reaction formation. And you actually try to become the very opposite of what you don't want to be. I mean, a classic illustration is I grew up dirt poor, and so now money is everything to me now. And so that's the reaction formation. And, you know, it's so interesting because so many people have a hard time understanding how narcissists, particularly the large and in charge and in your face narcissists, can be shame based because they project anything but that. And yet we have to remind ourselves that used to be a 5-year-old little boy or girl. And that little boy or girl was judged and yelled at or neglected or somehow told you're not measuring up. And so they decided to cover up those things and try to present themselves as something that they're not. Can you speak into how that dynamic can play where they learn very carefully to cover their shame, and then they cover it with all sorts of dysfunctional patterns that then they pass along to you, the adult child?
Well, it is reaction formation. I mean, if you feel small inside, you act bigger. You know, if you feel not smart inside, you have to be the smartest person in the room. But it's confusing because it's this facade. And I think one of the hardest parts of dealing with someone who has narcissism is we have to realize that they have a fundamentally different reality. I mean, they live in a different world, a world of entitlement, and, you know, they get special exceptions and, you know, things like connection and cooperation and equality and win-lose are foreign concepts to them. And I think what's painful in dealing with narcissists, whether it's your parent or anybody, is we keep expecting them to play the game of life like we do or view the world like we do, and they don't.
And they're literally, their brains can become hardwired in a different direction.
Right. Okay. Once you see that difference, I think you have a chance to, you know, have some options.
And I've spoken with people, and we may not be talking about a 23-year-old adult. We may be talking about a 63-year-old adult who still is under the influence of that overwhelming narcissistic parent. What do you see as being the some of the common fallout that these adults can carry with them for years and even decades into their adult years? What are some of the common indicators that says you still haven't gotten out from under your parents' dominating influences?
I see a lot of it in their relationships, that they're often, it's very hard for them to trust others, or they trust too easily and they trust the wrong people.
One or the other,
or in boundaries, you know, setting healthy boundaries for themselves. I see it in their decision-making, that they're sometimes afraid, you know, they're paralyzed by decisions because they were never given the autonomy to make their own decisions. You know, a lot of times I see it in self-image, and sometimes it manifests in stress-related health illness because that's a big load to carry for a long time.
I'd like for you to be aware of my video courses. One of them is entitled Free to Be, Finding Yourself Despite the Controllers in Your Life. Now, inside this course are various modules, and inside each module, it breaks down into various lessons with a video, teaching documents, and then also questions that go along with it. For example, inside Free to Be, you'll learn how controllers want to invite you into their games, but then you'll also learn about the 7 principles of freedom, how to develop self-trust, and much more. Now, if you are interested in enrolling in the classes, you could go to our survivingnarcissism.tv website, click the link for courses, and you'll find that one and others. And I hope that you would find them to be quite therapeutic.
And now back to Surviving Narcissism with Dr. Carter.
When I was in college, my very best friend, I would go to, he lived in East Texas. I went to Baylor University in Waco, and I'd go home with him on a Labor Day weekend or something like that. And I guess his father had to be one of the most balanced men that I have ever met. And I loved being around him because he would actually say the words, "What do you think?" or I'll bet that was kind of unusual, or you didn't see that one coming. And then he would just kind of step right into your world with you, and you feel like you had a guy with his arm around your shoulder saying, well, I'd like to know you more fully. Would you like to tell me about it? Unfortunately, that's almost a bit too rare, isn't it? To have a parent that can go into that empathy space and just the encouragement that goes along with it. But that's such an essential ingredient, isn't it?
It is. And it's so great that you had that. I mean, a lot of the research about children of who have trauma, who grow up resilient, is that they somewhere along the line, they found someone who believed in them, someone who could ask those kind of questions that you just talked about.
Yeah.
As opposed to the parent, I mean, people almost to a T who had narcissistic parents said, I never in my life heard my parents say, I was wrong, I'm sorry, you know, or those things like, well, what do you think?
Yeah. Or we can throw a caveat out there. If they did say, okay, maybe I shouldn't have done it that way, then there's always a but.
Right.
On the end of it. But your mother said this and you shouldn't have done that, or something of that nature. They just can't say, you know, you're hurting and I know that I'm part of that hurt. And so I have some hard things to look at within myself. Can we work on that together? I mean, I know there are people in our audience right now that'll just say, well, it's never going to happen inside my family.
But that's the dream, isn't it? That somebody,
yeah,
you could go to your parent and they could say, you know, I know I made some mistakes and I love you and I'm proud of you and I'm sorry for what I did. That's something that I think we all dream of, most of us. But if you have a parent who's not capable of that, you'll never get it. And that's part of healing, is accepting you just won't get it. And you have to grieve that loss.
I'm sure you're familiar with the term radical acceptance, you know, just accepting some things that are just not good at all. And yet,
yes,
it's simply there. And you say, it is, and I need to come to terms with it, as opposed to, I just wish, or why couldn't they? Talk to us a bit about the necessity of having that kind of a mindset, knowing full well that you may not ever get those healing words from that parent.
I think that's probably comes in two or three steps. One is recognizing and admitting that you grew up in an unhealthy environment. You know, a lot of us don't want to, that's hard to admit. We have family loyalties. We worry what that says about us. But there's freedom in looking and saying, hey, this wasn't healthy. I think secondly is to let yourself accept that that's the way it was, you know, and grieve that that's not the childhood maybe you would have wanted. And I think a third step, which is very important, is to look at your part in it. And I don't mean that about blame, because none of this is about blame. I don't blame controlling parents.
But the role.
The role you had, like, how did you, to emotionally survive, how did you make sense of the world? You know, maybe you became a rebel, or maybe you became like the, you know, the, like John Bradshaw talks about, the hero, the family hero, or maybe you checked out in one way or another. And that may have helped you survive, but there's big deficits to those strategies in adulthood. And so looking at your own part of it and seeing, what other coping mechanisms are there now that I'm not in that family, now that I'm an adult? You can still keep your old coping mechanisms. They're pretty hard to get rid of, but that's very freeing too.
There's a word that you've used several times already here in our discussion, and you just used it: free, freedom, freeing. And
yes,
obviously that is an opposite of the control mindset. I remember sitting in graduate school back in my 20s, and a professor was talking about working with children, and he just made a very simple comment. He said something to the effect of, we need to make sure that when a child enters into our office or playroom, that that child has the freedom to express themselves and show themselves for who they are. I don't have a clue what he said after that. When he was talking, I didn't have a clue what he said afterwards, because I was just wrapped around that thought. The child needs to know that he or she is free.
Yes.
And it's like, why didn't anybody tell me this? And one of the things that can be so healing is as an adult to remind yourself, okay, I came under the assumption that I was supposed to be controlled and I never did feel comfortable with that. But then the question is, what does it mean for me to be free? And that can open up a whole wide road ahead of you for exploration. What do you notice along the lines when people do begin grasping the notion, I am free, despite the message that were given to me, I'm free?
I think it can be initially disorienting or anxiety producing because it's something you didn't have. But I think it can also be very exciting. And, I make sense of unhealthy control as I think trust and control are opposites. I think we over control to the extent that we don't trust. And the extent we trust, we don't have the need to control. And so if people can think about that. Like for whatever reasons, my parent controlled me in these unhealthy ways because they didn't trust. They didn't trust life. They didn't trust themselves. They were terrified. Then maybe it feels less personal. There wasn't anything wrong
In
with
other words,
us.
you can apply objectivity as opposed to remaining subjectively sucked in.
Yes. Yes.
When you say trust yourself, a wonderful notion, what does that mean?
A lot of it's about acceptance, I think. We all have flaws. People who grew up in controlling families tend to have pretty vocal inner critics, those negative voices that are always second guessing us. I have yet to meet anyone who's had an inner critic ectomy. I mean, they're with us for life, but we can, that's not the voice of God or truth. That's just this critical part that's trying to protect us in a way. And so working with that and realizing that you can answer back to that, or you can say, oh, okay, thank you for sharing, but this is really how life is. That takes time. It's a practice, but it's
There's an
tremendously healing.
unhooking, isn't there?
It is. Yes.
Okay, now I'm sure that when you work with people who are trying to come to terms with the controlling parent, sometimes that parent might not be around anymore. But let's suppose that that parent is there, and let's say they just lives, 3 miles away, and you see them a lot, and that adult person who's trying to break away from the influence decides, I am going to sit down and talk to that parent. Like I did with my dad on multiple times. What do you say to that person when it becomes obvious that no matter how clearly you speak, no matter how diplomatic you are or constructive you try to be in broaching the subject, and then that narcissistic parent, kind of like what you just said a few minutes ago, just comes back with discounting and invalidating words. What do you say to that? When you hear reports coming back into your office after that effort has been made.
I think it's a great question. I think the most important thing, and ideally it's good if you say it before someone tries or before you try, is to ask yourself, what is my goal here? Is my goal to get the parent to change or get them to apologize or hear something from them? That's one possible goal. Or is the goal to say my piece, say my truth, put it out on the table, which is another goal. And they're different. And you don't have any control over the response you're going to get, but you do have control over what you say. And for some people, just being able to say it, that's a success. It doesn't matter how they respond.
I remember talking with a fellow who did almost exactly what you're talking about. He confronted actually his both mother and father, and he said it as cleanly as he could. And both of the parents came back and more or less it was the response was, "Well, that's ridiculous," or "Where did you come up with something like that?" And then this guy just gave what I consider to be the quintessential best answer, and it's like, "Well, that's how I think." That was it. He
Yes.
didn't feel the need to defend. He didn't need to get into an argument. He didn't say, you've done this to me all my life. It's like, well, that's how I think. And that's self-trust. In other words, I'm comfortable enough me being me. And if you're not comfortable with me being me, well, I still am comfortable with that.
That's a huge step if you grew up never being able to say that.
Yeah. Oh, I, the guy was beaming when he came into my office. It's like, and to your point, they didn't change. Right. But I did.
Yes. Which I think is, back to that word, freeing.
Yeah. Now, Dan, there are some people who have had clearly difficulties in their relations with their parents, and it may have been some really awful stuff. I mean, you've heard stories, you and I could swap stories. And there are some individuals who, for whatever reason, can't seem to take hold of what you and I are talking about. And you don't want to say this in any kind of shaming way, but it's like they're still holding on to their victimization status and they can't let it go. Mm-hmm. What do you notice along those lines?
I think that there's a phase when one acknowledges that they grew up in an unhealthy family, that often you may feel resentful, angry, blaming, and there's a lot of focus on what the parent did wrong. But I think that's a phase isn't really the right word. I think it's a stage of healing, because ultimately you also have to look at, okay, you're not responsible for what your parents did to you. They were the adults, you weren't. But you are responsible for what you do with your life as an adult. They aren't. And so to be able to say, okay, I might have had a very different life, maybe even a lot better life, if I didn't have these unhealthy aspects of my parenting. And I have to grieve that. And that wasn't fair. And it wasn't right. But what do I want to do now? How do I want to, I mean, do I still want to have, do I still want to live the life they wanted for me, which is to be in their shadow, for example, or do I want to live the life I want for me? And that's the shift that ultimately I think is very, very helpful.
You know, you go back to my friend's father who would ask, what do you think? Or, you know, what were you expecting? And you know, how can we deal with that? It's important for us to ask those same questions of ourselves. Well, what do I think? And what is my pain? And what is my pain telling me? And what would be the better alternatives? And I think that sometimes people feel like, well, yeah, but that child me is going to be left behind. And I feel like I'm abandoning, you know, me if I say, well, I'm not going to be that person anymore. Mm-hmm. Would that be a fair way to put it?
I think that's such a good point. And that's why I think part of healing and moving on is to bring that child with you. You know, we all have a hurt child in us. And to let it know in one way or another, and there's so many forms of therapy and self-help ways to do that, to let that hurt child know that, you know, I've got your back now and you'll never be in that situation again.
I'm hearing you. I'm listening to you. And you're saying that to your own self.
Yes.
And I'm a big encourager for people getting in support groups and all. One of the best things that can happen is when you're talking with other individuals, you may think, well, you didn't have exactly the same experience as I had, but there are quite a few parallels. And then to know that there are some other individuals who could actually benefit because you've been there and done that, and you can speak into it in a knowledgeable kind of way, an empathetic way. It is possible to take your own pain and frustration and disillusionment and then turn it into love. Would that be a fair thing to say?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting because I've led like small groups of therapy groups of people who grew up with narcissistic or controlling parents and given talks to even therapists who, you know, grew up with narcissistic parents. And one of the things that seemed to be most helpful in all of those groups is people hearing other people's stories. It's probably more helpful than anything I said. It was hearing these other people.
It's the experience.
Exactly, that I'm not alone. this, you know, because growing up with a narcissistic parent is very isolating. Our narcissistic parents divide and conquer, and so realizing you're not alone is a great thing.
Dr. Dan Neuhauth, we can go on and on with this. I mean, you're giving us so many words of wisdom, and I've just got to say, I just absolutely love how you talk. There's a calmness, there's a steadiness about you, and even that is healing, isn't it? And any final words that you want to share with our audience, if you've had that difficulty in your family of origin, how you can continue to move forward?
You know, one thing, we're in the age of technology now, and people talk about hacks or tricks to break the code. And a lot of times when people don't know what to do in a situation, particularly with regard to their parents, but in any situation, and they grew up with a very narcissistic or controlling upbringing, I'll tell them, you know what? Ask yourself what your parent would tell you to do in this situation, and then do the opposite.
I heard that coming.
Because more often than not, the opposite is going to be the healthier thing.
Yeah, knock it off. Okay, I want to knock it off.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, such a delight. Thank you so much. And here's the good news. You've written on so many different topics. I think we're just going to have to do this again at another time. What do you think?
Be my pleasure. Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you and all your listeners and viewers.
Well, we call ourselves Team Healthy here on our Surviving Narcissism channel, and it's because we're committed to it. And the thing we're committed to is dignity, respect, and civility. And you're just
Yes.
speaking our language. So thanks so much for who you are, for who you are, and for how you speak and what you have to say. Okay.
And thank you for all your great work.
Okay. Thank you,
All right.
Doctor.
Thank you for listening. Surviving Narcissism is the product of many years of work done by Dr. Les Carter. Dr. Carter is a best-selling author and therapist with more than 40 years of experience, specializing in anger management and narcissistic personality disorder. You can find more content from Dr. Carter on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at Surviving Narcissism, as well as on his website, survivingnarcissism.tv. Thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. We are so glad to have you on Team Healthy.